Welcome into the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Mike Schaefer, joined by Michael Bruns today. Brian Christopherson off eating a Toblerone somewhere.
Yeah.
Looking at watches.
Opening bank accounts.
Looking at pocket knives.
Hopefully picking me out of St. Bernard.
Possibly. All of those things. If you could figure out where in the world Brian Christopherson is, well, we gave four pretty obvious guesses. But yeah. Or hints, I should say.
And he's just very down the middle. No, yeah. Not making any opinions on anything.
That's BC to a T, you know, very neutral. So, all right, you got the two of us today for
old
the podcast.
School.
And it's a throwback to a simpler time before there was three, and, you know, we're not recording off of a phone sitting in the middle of the table. So we've come a little ways from that. But, Bruns, how are you?
I'm well. We can certainly meander like we used to through a variety of topics if you want to set the mood.
Before we jump into anything too serious, where do you come down on bat flips?
I'm pro bat flipping. This is a pro bat flip podcast, I think. I don't want to speak for you, but...
I'm very pro bat flip. It's the one off in, you know, the land of Swiss Miss that we don't know about.
Yeah, I'm very pro bat flipping. One of my favorite YouTube rabbit holes to go down are Korean baseball bat flips, because they are epic, and I think that Major League Baseball needs to embrace that, because it's I'm pro bat flip and I'm anti unwritten rule of baseball, which I think are among the dumbest things ever.
Have you mentioned this to Darren Erstad ever?
Well, so last year
there was
the thing with Angelo Altavilla, and Erstad was actually asked about that this year, about where he came down on bat flips after the whole Bryce Harper thing. And he said that he was okay with it as long as it didn't upset the pace of the game. So
if you're flipping your bat, as long as you're moving in the direction of first.
So I think as long as you don't stare a home run down while you flip, it's okay. And Cam Chick went around the bases in about 17 seconds after he hit a home run. And I asked Erstad after that game, I said, did you tell Chick, you know, did you tell him to slow down at all? And then he reiterated the point that he's not anti-bat flip. He just wants the pace of the game to continue. So
amazing.
That might be something to watch going forward this season.
What's the football equivalent of a bat flip? Is it Antonio Brown with the first downs and pointing and dropping the ball?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably like a Randy Moss mooning the crowd celebration,
not the
right?
Equivalent. That was a great moment in football history.
Well, bat flips are great.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, that only ever happened once. Bat flips happen a few times.
Yeah, I mean, or like a Joe Horn cell phone celebration, like...
You're going for very specific touchdown celebrations.
Yeah, I mean, those are just examples that came to mind.
Is it the same as a guy running down the court holding up three fingers and celebrating after a three-pointer?
Doing the forehead thing?
Is that the same?
No, because that's more common. I mean, it would be like... That would be
it
like
feels a, like the same. The guy made a big play.
But that would be like if a guy bat-flipped every time he hit like a C&I single.
I mean, you've seen Yasiel Puig.
Yeah.
I bat-flip in softball. On my seeing eye singles. And if I know I've just dunked it over second base, which is where I try to go, that bat is just flying through the air towards the dugout.
You do like kind of like the fishing reel release with the bat.
I haven't done that one yet. All right, well, probably enough about bat flips, unfortunately. But as you now know, this podcast, very pro bat flip. Well, where do we want to go with this? We'll talk some baseball a little bit later. We'll talk some basketball a little bit later. We're going to jump back to football here, kind of finish up what we saw with the spring game, what we saw with the spring in general. Here's a question that I've been getting a lot because of the Jakeem Green addition.
Okay.
Do you think we're going to see a lot more 4-3 this year?
Well, Eric Chenander says he's not a 3-4 guy. That's the line, right?
Yeah, I mean... Three years of calling
defense. It's like, well, I could count, but
yeah.
You know, I think that they will use it situationally. I don't think that they're going to get away from what they do, but, I mean, you have another guy potentially in that defensive line that you can rotate through there, and they want to play a lot of guys, and they want to move guys around, and they love that versatility. So, I mean, I think it just gives you more options. I don't know that it necessarily is going to upset the apple cart with what they do.
But do you think that any of it would have to do with the fact that they're actually pretty low in terms of inside linebackers, so you could be protecting your depth issues there by playing more guys up front?
That could be. I mean, it's so if you go to a four-man front, what is your linebacker group look like in that situation? Do you have Mo Berry at your mic? You have what, probably Alex Davis on the outside too? I mean, do you move Colin Miller outside? Because you're probably not going to have JoJo Doman out there in that situation.
I guess my idea is if you'd have four down linemen, you'd probably have a little bit smaller, quicker linebackers. So you'd have Doman, Ferguson, Berry. But you'd be pretty small at the point of attack, even with four down linemen.
Yeah.
I don't see him doing it very often. It's just one of those things that has come up, I know, since Green had committed, and people kind of wonder if that just opens the door for more of the 4-3, which I think they were always going to play regardless of Green. They were going to play more 4-3, but I just don't see it being a, you know, more than 10 to 15% of your real look. I still think they're going to be a pretty heavy base 3-4 team.
What other questions have you gotten a lot over the last week or so? I mean, we both do a lot of radio, it was kind of a blah spring game, if we're being honest. What are people wanting to know? Because it doesn't seem like to me that we learned a ton out of what we saw last Saturday.
One of the more consistent questions of what does a second year for Adrian Martinez look like with Scott Frost and Verduzco in comparison to what we've seen in second years of, say, Marcus Mariota and Mackenzie Milton? Is it fair to assume that sort of a jump? And is it harder to assume that sort of a jump with the question of the skill players around him?
Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's...
I think it is. I really do. I mean, I think he has a lot of talent. I think we've seen over the course of the last year that he can be a pretty special player. He's made throws that, honestly, you haven't seen a lot of at Nebraska. And he has a dynamic ability as a runner that we saw at times to be pretty dangerous. And frankly, he has all of those talents, but it's just highlighted by a pretty smart offensive design. Like, I just think this offense does such a good job of creating openings that I'm not saying Nebraska can just plug and play and replace Stanley Morgan and Divine Ozigbo, but I just don't think it's going to be as hard to replace their production from a stat standpoint. Where it's going to be harder is when you really need that first down, when you need that long ball against Ohio State, who's that guy going to be? And that I know that's a similar, but it's different in some ways too. Those people have to emerge.
I think it was Damon Benning brought this up on Twitter today that I it was something I really hadn't considered, especially as it kind of relates to Nebraska's running back room. And I don't know why I hadn't considered this because it seems, you know, pretty straightforward, but you know, when you're talking about guys coming in to this offense, especially at that running back spot, you're looking at, you know, Dedrick Mills having to contribute, you know, pretty quickly out of the junior college ranks. But, you know, this is a guy that's played in an option offense at Georgia Tech where you're probably looking at, you know, eight guys in the box pretty regularly. You played junior college ball at Garden City where it was basically, this is the offense we're going to run. Line up and stop us. And, you know, in a lot of his games, I mean, it's, you know, nine guys in the box. And he's going to be coming into Scott Frost's offense where it's all about spacing. It's all about creating mismatches. It's all about numbers and getting numbers advantages and, you know, setting up opportunities for cutbacks and things like that. That it's going to be a completely different setup for him in a good way, that maybe allows his ability as a runner to shine a little bit more, even more than it already has, because it's just a different kind of setup. And I think it kind of speaks to the point you're making too of, you know, there's the pieces there around him and just the way the offense is designed, I think really kind of is going to allow those guys to shine.
Yeah, I really hadn't considered just the sheer difference of what the box would look like for somebody like Dedrick Mills and Nebraska's offense versus Georgia Tech's or even Garden Cities, but that is that's certainly something to consider. I just really kind of want to fast forward to fall camp. I don't, because I enjoy the period of time where we don't have to.
Yeah, so you're just blowing through summer, daily. Huh?
But if we could, I really am so curious how some of these guys, like a Ramir Johnson, can look on the field at the same time as a Wandale and a J.D. Spielman and or a Dedrick Mills. Like, it's tantalizing just thinking about the different weapons that they're going to have at their disposal and how that has to force a defense to defend things. I mean, we're going to be headed to a season of which there's reasonable expectations, in my opinion. But things could look really interesting in a hurry. I mean, if they click as an offense early in the season, they get through that initial non-conference slate, and then you got Illinois before you play Ohio State. I mean, if you're sitting at 4-1 or 5-0 after September, the talk around here is going to be pretty loud, and a lot of it is, you know, because of the offense, but of course the defense is going to have to show up too.
If they get to 4-1, 5-0 at that point, are you immediately booking flights for Indianapolis?
No, because I think the Big Ten West is going to be really hard this year. Not necessarily because there's a super dominant team, but because I think they're all in the same.
Yeah.
I don't know, outside of Illinois, who maybe I'll eat my hat or my words or my foot, whatever it is.
AJ Bush is gone. He can't hurt you anymore.
I don't think Illinois is going to have the horses to survive in the rest of the division, but you could make a solid case for the other six teams as potential of winning that division. I mean, I think Purdue is maybe the least likely of the six because of what they have to replace, and I'm not a big Sindelar guy in terms of their quarterback play.
Well, you're a big David Blau guy.
Well, this is a David Blau podcast. We like bat flips, and we like David Blau.
Yeah.
So it really isn't going to be interesting for what that Big Ten West looks like. And I mean, Wisconsin's going to be one of those teams that they're going to be different too. They're not going to have a quarterback that's pretty much a 2 on the 1-10 scale anymore. So what does that mean for them? Is Jack Cohn going to be the guy? Is Graham Mertz going to take it as a freshman? Is Graham Mertz going to do a lot of what, you know, Adrian Martinez did with a little bit more steady of a system around him? So, and then of course you have Iowa, which
pencil an 8-4 in that race, right, for Kirk Ferentz.
And then that game on Black Friday, which Nebraska fans suddenly need and want more and more every year. So I just think that division is going to be really tough. And the team that I think is the hardest to peg is Minnesota, because I could see them winning that division, as ridiculous as that might sound.
I think the way that they finished after they made that change on defense last year led me to believe that Minnesota was going to be – they could be something this year if they get their quarterback position figured out, because they were kind of a mess last year.
Right.
They have some weapons at receiver. Young. Yeah.
And they have, they've always had some pretty interesting running backs. And you give them, I mean, Carter Coughlin's a good defender. You give them a good defense, or a good enough defense in the Big Ten West, I mean, they're going to be a challenge. And, you know, I went from a guy who didn't believe PJ Fleck was long for the Big Ten to, I mean, he still might not be, because he could have enough success that he leaves, but he's a better coach than I was going to give him credit for.
This is going to be a big year for them, though, because...
Oh, yeah. Well, there's expectations.
Right. I mean, the way that they've
finished... You're at a year zero. There's no more year zero. It's not year one. It's year three.
Because if you come out and struggle, if you're PJ Fleck this year, you're going to need to start circling the boats a little bit, because I mean...
Jeez.
That whole... What?
He just drops it in there and is so happy for himself.
That, because, I mean, I think there's a shelf life to the rah-rah thing if you're not winning. And, you know, it's kind of getting to that point up there, I think, where people are wanting to see something.
Yeah.
And
that's a fan base that, I mean, they'll be interested, but if you don't start winning, they're not going to show up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know...
That'll be an interesting game in October, for sure.
It will be. I think Purdue will be... okay, I think that's going to be a tough game just because it's going to be on the road. Illinois, I mean, they're probably going to be starting a freshman quarterback this coming year.
You think Williams?
I think so.
Juice?
I think so.
Not really Juice, but he could be Juice.
He could be.
All their good quarterbacks have to go by Juice Williams, right? Like, that's the rule.
That's what they look for first when they're evaluating quarterbacks.
Do they have an Aurelius Ben?
Is your last name Williams?
Your last name's Williams. You're not that tall. All right, you're in.
I don't think that Lovie Smith water skis quite like the Zucker did.
I don't think Lovie Smith water skis at all.
Could you imagine how big that beard would be if you got like some lake water in there? Anyways,
clean
like,
it out.
It's like
a
sponge.
Bit.
But yeah, I mean, the West will be intriguing. We can get into that a lot more
throughout the summer.
Yeah, there'll be time for that. But
do you want to do you had a game for us? Do you want to do that game before the break or after?
Let's do it now. It's not a game, but just some word association. It's kind of a game. This is as close to a game as we're gonna get. So, a little word association out of spring ball. Five. Things, just first thing that comes to your first guy that comes to your mind or position group, some word association. Underrated right now.
Safeties. I think that they're going to be a real strength of the team, and they may not be underrated anymore, but they certainly were going into the spring. And I don't know if people are going to talk about them as much as we have. Maybe they have. I don't really listen to anybody else because we're so great, but I would go with the safeties there.
Who will be your give me your two deep for what that looks like for game one at safety? I'm curious to see, because I think the starters we can kind of agree on, but
Markell and Deontay, then probably Eric Lee, Cam Taylor. That's your two deep
with Cam Taylor playing elsewhere.
Okay, so but, no Cam Taylor,
but I mean he could be on the two deep. But
if he's healthy, CJ Smith is going to be in there.
Okay, I don't think he will be by that point.
Yeah,
but.
And there's. That's a tough one, but they really like C.J. Smith. He was going to play last fall until he got hurt in that Northwestern game.
Yep,
and or he was going to play the back half of that schedule. So I wouldn't toss him to the side.
Because he didn't do anything in spring, right? I never saw him dressed out for practice or anything.
He was you'd see him walking around, but he wasn't ever dressed out.
Okay, next crucial.
Crucial position player.
Crucial's the word.
Well, Adrian Martinez. He's a straw that stirs a drink.
We'll give you bonus points for non-Adrian Martinez answer.
Okay. Mo Berry. You don't have enough depth at inside linebacker as it is. He's kind of the heart of your defense in terms of an emotional leader. I think that if you listen to Barrett Rood closely, he's a guy that's made a pretty big jump. Which is good for Nebraska, because if he can be a productive inside linebacker, if he can eliminate some of the mistakes he made last year, if he has guys in the right position set up to do what they're supposed to do, a good Mo Berry could equal a better Nebraska defense.
He has to be, though, right, given the depth concerns at that spot?
I mean, am I cheating? Sure.
No, that's fine. That's a good answer.
Yeah.
I applaud you for the non-Adrian Martinez answer. Most improved?
Position or...
Most improved.
God, I don't like this. I
you
want
do, it. You could do player too.
Tailored a little bit more.
Bonus points for player. I think. That well, narrow it down for me.
Here's the most improved for you.
Okay.
Damian Daniels. I think that where he's at as a player now in his second year, expected to help the third year with the team, second year that he'll be playing, he's probably made as big a jumps in the offseason as just about anybody because his conditioning is going to be better. His strength is better. He's spent a year under Mike Dawson. Now he's with Tony Tuioti, who really seems to like him. He's got his brother around, so I think his mindset is good. I think his attitude is good. I think the expectations for him are going to be fair to high, and I think he's going to be able to meet them and exceed them.
I was surprised that Tony Tuioti said later in the spring, somebody asked him in the group what Damian needed to work on, and he said conditioning. He said he still wasn't there yet. Which I was that surprised me because I think that he looks different,
right,
a lot different, and that's I mean if they get 25 snaps out of him in game, I think they feel pretty good about that.
I think some of that though is going against the offense that they face every day in the spring.
Yeah, that's true.
He's never going to look probably as conditioned as what you want compared to the guys that are running a play every 15 seconds.
This is true. Concerned
running back. I mean. If only because you didn't have anybody really practice this spring that you're going to depend on next year. So am I concerned that they won't find anybody? No. Am I concerned that it may take them a few games before it really kind of sharpens out as to what they're going to do? Yes, because we saw that last year, and they were a better team when their running game was better. And so if Dedrick Mills doesn't hit the ground running, so to speak, or Ramir Johnson – or you know, whatever happens with Maurice Washington, that offense is limited. Your wide receivers aren't nearly as good as they were last year, we expect. So, really, that's not even a fair statement. You don't have Stanley Morgan. So, you need your running game to be a little bit better. So, the concern there is just based on what they didn't have coming out of spring.
Does the Greg Bell situation last year give you pause before saying that, you know, running back is going to, like, these guys coming in are going to, you know, really take over that spot?
Yes and no. excuse me. I think that you have to divorce yourself of people that have failed from similar roles, because these guys are all different, and why Greg Bell failed is going to be different than why Dedrick Mills would either succeed or fail. So nobody's in the same category in that regard. So, I mean, I just don't, because if you felt that way, then you would think that, you know, certain things are going to happen because that's how it's happened in the past. I don't view football in that lens.
And this isn't really, I guess, who left you, position group or player, left you wanting more from the spring? Not because you, either because you didn't see it or, you know, you saw something that you're like, okay, this guy's got something. You can take that two different ways, I guess.
Well, I mean, probably wide receiver, I guess, because I mean, Cade Warner had his nice long catch as he did last spring. Cade Warner is going to be reliable, dependable. I think he's going to be one of Nebraska's top four receivers and by receivers, I mean pass catchers, anybody, in terms of yardage and targets next year. I feel pretty confident in that. Beyond him, I would have liked to have seen Jaren Woodyard haul in that pass from Luke McCaffrey, the first one. I would have liked to have seen guys make plays, and I don't think we really did. We saw the tight ends were involved, and I think that's good, and I think that's a good sign. But I still would love to have seen more from Hunt and Woodyard and Williams and some of those guys. But I think that might have been my answer almost regardless. And some of it is I saw a lot from Mike Williams last spring, and it didn't translate into much into the fall. So what does it really matter?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's my list.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to get into the roundtable that happened on Monday with Nebraska's basketball assistants, hit a little bit on where that roster is at and how things are shaking out. Nebraska had another transfer in basketball yesterday. So we will touch on all of that. We'll get into a little baseball. Maybe Brunts will have another game for us on the other side. Doesn't look like it, but maybe he'll create something really quickly.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
What did you learn in your time over there? I mean, I know that's a very open-ended thing, so you just
Go. Well, I spent the bulk of my time with Bobby Lutz and Matt Abdelmassi, kind of talking about a variety of topics. I mean, with Matt, it was mainly Cruton. With Bobby Lutz is interesting, and you know, his job is special assistant to Fred Hoiberg, and you're like, okay, well, what does that mean? And basically, it's everything. He's handling scheduling for Nebraska. He told a story about when he was at Iowa State, he handled all of their scouts, all their opponent scouts. When he was with the Windy City Bulls, he handled all of their opponent scouts. When he was at NC State, he handled all of their opponent scouts. So he said, I like to watch film. And I was like, well, that seemed kind of true. But I mean, that's what he's going to be doing for Nebraska. I mean, right now he's going through and kind of self-scouting what's on the roster right now. Going through, and he said he was watching just religiously NBA playoff games to see if there was anything that Nebraska could incorporate into their roster. And so he's going to be that kind of catch-all guy for them, basically doing everything but going out on the road recruiting, or that he's allowed to do NCAA-wise. So, you know, I think he's going to have a big role in kind of forming what this team's going to look like. And you know, the thing that's interesting that he talked about with Fred Hoiberg was, you know, they just really clicked. And Bobby Lutz was basically running Fred Hoiberg's offense before Fred Hoiberg was at Iowa State. Played a lot of, you know, four guys out, wanted guys that could shoot at every position, and just really they clicked stylistically. And Bobby Lutz said that he would have stayed. He was only at Iowa State for a year, and you're kind of like, okay, well, what happened? Well, he said that he's an only child. His dad had a heart attack in North Carolina, where he's from, and he basically had to take care of the family. And he said he would have stayed at Iowa State for a long time if he would have been able to do that, but you know, situations didn't allow that to happen. So he's going to be real key, I think, for the X's and O's portion, a guy that Fred really values. And you know, with Matt Abdelmassi, you know, if you're kind of breaking up roles, I mean, everybody's going to recruit, but his job is to basically go get players. I mean, that's what his job is. He's the second highest paid assistant in the Big Ten right now. And Fred Hoiberg said, you know, Matt was the most important hire that he's ever made. And when a guy like Hoiberg says something like that, you're kind of like, oh.
When he was at Iowa State?
But when he was with the Timberwolves. Oh, wow. Because that's how they got.
That's where the connection started.
Yeah, because he, Abdelmassi was like an intern in their personnel department when Fred was there. So he talked a lot about, you know, how they play the transfer game, what they want to do with this class and kind of building this roster. And you know, they're going to have to look grad transfer a little bit more now than they would normally just to fill out the roster, because we went through and did the math. You've got either five or four scholarships available, depending on what Isaiah Roby does. But they want to get 10 scholarship guys that can help them on the floor next year, get two or three guys doing the sit-out transfer thing, and bring them back the following year ready to go. So, you know, that's kind of the goalpost that they're aiming for. And now it's just a matter of, you know, trying to sift through the transfer portal right now and seeing if they can find guys who can help them. And they've done that so far, already hosting three transfers last week. They're going to host a few more this week as well. So, you know, definitely a busy time, and you know, actually I think a good time for Nebraska to kind of reshape their roster, because everybody says, oh, how's Fred going to do this? You know, this is what they did at Iowa State. This is what Matt did at St. John's. And when you're taking over a program that struggled the way that Nebraska did last year down the stretch, I mean, why, you probably want to turn the roster over. That's it.
That's everything?
Yeah, what do you got?
So one of the first things that jumps out to me as the staff was assembled is that you're basically putting a ton of faith in one guy to be your prime recruiter.
See, but Armand Gates is that, he recruits well too.
Does he?
Yeah. Like he was the architect of that class that Northwestern put together that basically got into the NCAA tournament. It was a top 30 class at Northwestern, which, I mean, that's miracle work, but I think he's a strong recruit. I don't know how much he was really able to
He's only here for a short amount of time, so I don't want to be like, oh, well, what did he do at Nebraska? Like,
right.
In basketball recruiting, it takes years.
Right. Well, he was one of the primary reasons, I think, that Akola Rope stuck with his commitment. Gervais Green, too. I mean, he was part of that effort as well. So, I mean, we'll see now that he's, you know, here and seems settled for a while.
Yeah, it feels like a lot of the optimism is going to be banked on Abdelmassa's ability to get these transfers. And I get it. Like, that's what they did.
Mm-hmm.
It's just initially, it's just one of those things where it's like, well, if this doesn't work in year one, you don't have guys stashed away for 2020, 2021.
Right.
Like, is this, how ugly can it be before it gets better? It's sort of how I feel about it.
No, that's fair. I mean, that first year at Iowa State, they went 16-16, and it was, I think they probably punched above their weight a little bit that year. And, you know, they released the Big Ten schedule yesterday.
They got no favors.
You got Michigan State and Purdue once.
But they play
at home.
Some of the bottom teams that don't play that often. You only have one game against some of your comparables, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's a tough conference. Like, I think part of it is that I look at next year, I don't see them winning more than 14 games. And part of that is because I think the Big Ten is going to be pretty good again.
Yeah.
And Nebraska's players, well, I really like Burke, and I'm excited to see what Green can do. You don't have a big man on your roster aside from Brady Hyman right now. And they're going to have to find some grad transfers who they're probably going to be scraping a little bit to get some depth in that regard right away next year. But you also got to find some guys that can play for you in 2 years as big men. And I don't know exactly who those are going to be.
Well, it's going to be interesting for this year because, you know, I think the one thing that Nebraska is going to be for teams, especially if they can play the way that Hoiberg wants to play, is there going to be stylistically a little bit of a change up for what teams normally see in the Big Ten? I mean, it's not, Michigan State plays with a lot of tempo, but there's not a ton of teams in the Big Ten where, you know, you're trying to get as you know, as many shots off as you can, or just really kind of trying to push the pace.
They're going
to
play like Iowa,
right?
Is what you're building to here.
But I think they would even want to play a little bit faster than Iowa too. But I mean, that same idea that, like, you've got four guys that can knock down a shot from anywhere, or ideally five. But you know, just that kind of change up, I think will help them a little bit. I mean, I'm sure that Nebraska fans are probably a little skeptical sitting there thinking, okay, we're going to be a team that's going to make a bunch of three-pointers. Like, what's that going to look like? But that's the idea.
I mean, I know I'm the one pouring some skepticism on this. I do think
you're slathering it on.
It's going to work. I expect that it's going to work. I just think that there's so much of this expectation that because of who he's hired, because of Fred Hoiberg, like, it's going to work quicker than and because Tim Miles had success in year two, I think the expectation is that Fred Hoiberg should have things set up for the same way. And I don't necessarily know, unless they really pull a couple interesting sit-out transfers, what that's going to look like in a year. But I mean, overall, I'm excited for the direction of this. I certainly am excited for the quality of basketball that is coming here. I look at Illinois with Brad Underwood, and I think he's a good coach, despite how
their defense
feel.
Is a mess.
What is that?
Their defense is such a mess.
Right. But I mean, you're talking about tempo. Like, that's a place that they're going to try to play even faster than they have. They're, to me, a team that's going to be kind of one to watch next year as to where they're at. But he's a similar, not as prolific as Fred Hoiberg, but coming from the Big 12, taking that style, bringing it here, and it's taken him, you know, a couple years to get this thing rolling. So I'm just throwing a little water onto the...
Jeez, you're just...
It's just a wet blanket.
Yep. It's a big soggy blanket.
And I know that Brian spent more time with him than you did, but what did you hear from Doc Sadler when you went through the audio and you saw what came out?
Oh, I mean, it's Doc. I mean, that's... You really have to give Doc a lot of credit for the job that he did at Southern Miss, because I don't know that he could have walked into a worse situation in terms of NCAA issues, just complete mess of a roster from what Donnie Tendel left in that place. And they improved every year. I mean, for Hoiberg, he's going to kind of be their defensive guy. I mean, that's what he wants him to do. And, you know, I think if there's one thing that I think Doc can coach defense pretty well. He didn't say anything about tennis or baseline to baseline or anything like that. But, I mean, he's a guy that is respected by everybody on that staff. And the one thing that a couple of those guys mentioned was Doc is really good about – he's a good, like, team guy to have on your coaching staff because he's good at kind of keeping it light. And, you know, college basketball can be a grind. And having somebody like that is good. I'd forgotten this too, but Abdul Massey was telling this story that Doc Sadler told him that he had gone 45 days one time without taking a drink of water. It was basically like...
That is so unhealthy and so wrong.
It was like he said that the only water that he had was the ice that was in his Diet Mountain Dew.
So ridiculous.
He's got to have like kidney stones the size of like a basketball.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's funny and it makes sense because it's Doc Sadler and it's one of those things like if you hear that about a different coach, you're like, yeah, I don't believe it.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
You kind of take it as to be something. Any of the names that you've seen that Nebraska's looking at or hosted this past weekend, any of them jump out to you more than others?
Well, I mean, it's they stood out. I mean, the pair of guys that they hosted from UNLV, you know, those guys to me would kind of fit the bill of that sit-out transfer that could come in, you know, basically work with Hoiberg and get a little bit more out of their games before, you know, they're coming in and having to really, you know, be counted on. You know, just getting Gervais Green in the fold, I think, is big because you look at what they want to do. They want to shoot a lot from the outside. They're going to need guards that can rebound because, you know, as much as you're going to be able to do with, you know, just having, you know, going through the transfer portal and finding guys, I think you're really going to need your guards to be able to rebound and kind of hold their own a little bit more than you would otherwise. So
they need a point guard.
Yeah, I mean, they like Burke. They like his competitiveness. And actually, Matt Abdul Massey said that they had tried to recruit him at St. John's when Nebraska was getting involved with him as a
transfer from Robert Morris.
Yeah, so you know that they like him, but you know I don't know that he's necessarily the kind of guy that's a long term answer.
Yeah.
At point guard.
I don't think they have a long term answer right now at point guard, which is why somebody like Cam Mack that they've been recruiting was at St. John's is a really important part of what you're trying to put together. But I'm really curious what that roster construction is going to look like. I'm just kind of curious to see how that first year goes and who's on the bench and who we're hearing reports of and scout stuff. Also, the Bobby Lutz and Doc Sadler thing is really kind of interesting because you essentially have three head coaches on that staff.
It's a lot of guys who have a ton of experience.
And they've done it before, which I think has to make you feel pretty good. Mm-hmm. If you're a Nebraska fan looking at this, which is the cohesiveness of that group should be able to come together pretty easily. Which if there's one thing that we've learned at Nebraska in the last, I don't know, decade, is that you kind of want your staff to be on the same page because when they're all pulling in different directions, it doesn't work real well.
Yeah. And kind of going back to the visitor thing, the one guy I didn't mention, you know, Maurice Clue, the transfer from Oklahoma State that kind of had an interesting exit from there, being accused of vandalism, and then he was going to go to Cleveland State and then reopened his recruitment. I mean, 6'9", 225 pounds, I mean, those are the kinds of guys that you have to get in your program because, you know, it's not a traditional back-to-the-basket center, but you can, you know, play a couple of those four-type guys, I think, mm-hmm. and have some success. So, you know, it'll be interesting how it shakes out. I mean, you've got Cam Mack, who was originally signed to St. John's. He's going to be visiting coming up here. And, you know, the other big ones this weekend, I mean, you've got DeAndre Davis coming in as an official visitor who's already committed to you in 2020 class, trying to keep him. So, you know, they're really got a lot of balls in the air to try to fill out that roster.
Yeah, we'll certainly see where that's at. Speaking of balls in the air, Nebraska hit some yesterday that even left the park. Let's hit on Nebraska baseball for a brief couple minutes here before we jump out for the week.
Yeah.
That was a big win for them, not because of the opponent, but just to avoid another midweek loss, to avoid some noise, to get some runs on the board after being shut out by Kansas State after a quiet weekend, which they swept, but a quiet weekend up in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, no, and it's, you know, the midweek games are sometimes just slogs. Like, you just want to get through them. You don't want to burn your pitching for the weekend. And for Nebraska, you know, they had travel issues coming back from Penn State, didn't get back till late on Monday night. You come out and really just kind of get dominated by K-State on Tuesday night. And last night, you have your two freshman pitchers walk eight guys in the first 2 2/3 innings, but you still come back and win that game. I mean, you kind of get out of the park as quickly as you can and move on. And you had some guys swinging the bats well. Finally, you know, this is the first time since the Purdue series that they were, you know, double digits in hits. And, you know, we're going to find out. You know, I think the jury's still out on Nebraska, even though they're, you know, first place in the Big Ten right now, where they're at, because you've got Illinois, Northwestern, Michigan, Arizona State coming up, plus a really tough series at Iowa this weekend. So, you know, I think that, you know, they can lean on pitching, but the bats have to be a little bit more consistent in some of those games, because it's been a little hit or miss, pun kind of intended, over the last few weeks. And, you know, I think they have the talent to be competitive in the Big Ten and potentially win it just based on their schedule, but I don't know that they've been tested in the last few weeks in the way that they're going to be over the last half of the conference season here.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums up baseball to a T. I mean, it's a lot of wait and see. They've got things set up to where they could have a really nice postseason bid, too, if they just go and win out.
Yeah, and it's I think as much a question as there is right now about the direction of, you know, the season, I think you have to feel really good about the future, because so many of these guys that are contributing in the lineup, they're going to be back next year, and they're big pieces of that right now. And you know, I think there's a lot of confidence about this class.
Do you have a favorite amongst those guys?
I think Cam Chick's going to be a guy.
Is it the last name?
Part of it. I think the fact that he can play third base, second base, probably shortstop. He's got a little bit of power, but, I mean, ideally, I think you'd have him batting leadoff with his speed. And, you know, he's just – these young guys, they just kind of have a red-assed attitude about them.
Like, red-ass.
They play hard, and they've got a little edge, and that's something that I think the program's been lacking for the last few years in any kind of meaningful way.
All right, we'll finish up with some very important questions about Easter candy right here. Would you rather eat a Cadbury egg or a Peep?
Oh, the egg.
Do you like Cadbury eggs?
No. I hate Peeps that much.
When you were a kid, did you ever get one of the giant chocolate bunnies?
Yes.
Did you finish the whole thing?
No.
Has anyone ever finished the whole thing?
How did you eat the bunny? Did you start with the ears and go down?
Yeah, probably.
I don't think I ever probably made it below.
Did you start from the side like some sort of monster? No. Like you're playing a harmonica?
No. No, I think that this podcast is very, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think this is a very pro bat flip podcast, and a very, this is not a peep show.
Not a peep show. I'd eat them. I don't like them. I mean, if someone gave me one and they're like, here, have this, I'd probably eat it, but they're just not good.
Did they do this at Columbus High where you had the science experiment where they put a peep underneath like a pressure vac and like blew the thing up? Like they made it like really big and expanded it, and then that was just a Millard North science thing.
Might have been a Millard North science thing. The only science thing I can remember from Columbus High is we made tie-dye t-shirts once.
In science class?
Yeah, it was chemistry class, I think. I'm almost positive of this. And I'm probably not the guy to ask anyways, because I took some elective science classes that weren't very challenging. We'll put it that way. But
What did you take? Would you have eighth period T-shirts?
No,
my T-shirts class.
I think in chemistry as juniors you made T-shirts. Huh. I think.
What was the chemical reaction that you were studying?
I don't know.
We need to explore this more in future podcasts.
Don't ask
podcasts.
Me questions about my science career.
T-shirt aficionado Mike Schaefer. Do you still have it? Do you still have the tie?
I guarantee it's somewhere in my house in Columbus. Probably in some trunk.
Bring it. You could probably make it. You could do a tie-dye T-shirt sweater vest bet with BC when he
Mine turned
back.
Out pretty bad. Well, if that one doesn't fit, I can just check with Mike Babcock and get a couple of the Grateful Dead ones.
This is true.
Wear one of those to practice someday. All right. Well, as always, check out Husker 24/7. Plenty of stuff recruiting-wise. Just wrote about Javon DeWitt, an update as to what to expect with him for recruiting this spring as he continues his fight with cancer. We have updates on some other recruiting stuff as to where the coaches are at. We'll still have some more football coverage as we go through. Brunts will have some basketball things, I'm sure, coming out of Monday, as well as stuff from the visitors. And then baseball coverage throughout the weekend, too. Everybody have a good holiday weekend, and we will be back with you next week.